coast to coast on the World Wide Web, this is Trot Radio on Standard Red Canada. 2010, a look back.
Mystician looking to pull off a major shocker in the Metro, and he's done it! Mystician wins!
Muscle Massive, Pierce on the outside, Campbell and Pierce together, Lefty Chucky, Muscle Massive on the outside, Wishing Stone third, Muscle Massive, and it's a massive win for Ron Pierce!
Rock and roll heaven, one more lap, charging up on the outside, these two come to the line, one more lap! 147 and 4 in the pace!
Rock and roll heaven clear by two, three quarters, 119 and 4, 26 and 2, are you kidding me here? Rock and roll heaven, a coronation to the Breeders' Crown Final!
Welcome everybody, I'm Norm Borg. You know, 2010 was filled with great memories and new hope for the future, but in many ways, the new year began the way the old year ended. Navel-gazing about how we as an industry are going to save ourselves from ourselves. Russia!
We could develop a super circuit.
We have to reach out to the great body of people who currently are not horse players.
If we had a standard wagering format, obviously a standard takeout rate.
I think that there's a great, huge potential customer base out there that's currently being ignored.
Maybe you hire one racing office, one central racing office with the best people you can find, the best TV production you can put together.
An interstate pool or an interprovincial pool of some type.
Basically consolidate operations.
Consolidate operations.
You could develop a super circuit.
From the Sam McKees to the Stan Bergsteins, the word was consolidation. Or was it fewer race dates? No, more race dates. A national pool, a super circuit, did we mention reduced takeout? The ideas swirled around like January snow. Meantime, new faces were added to the corporate racing scene. Don Amos became the new president of OHA. Terry Kiko became COO of Horse Racing Alberta, only to resign his post just months later. Yet through all the uncertainty, the anxiety about how to survive in this sport, the frontline racing community, the trainers, drivers, caretakers, owners, well, they do what they always do. Help others in even greater need.
The worst disaster in United Nations history.
Well, yes, some reports coming from the Haitian capital of Port-au-Prince suggesting that the city has been largely destroyed.
Wherever you are watching this broadcast throughout the world, I hope you can hug a loved one close and thank God that you are not in Port-au-Prince tonight.
And in typical fashion, the racing community came to the aid of the island of Haiti through its worst tragedy. People like Mike Galata, the owner of Lismara, offered proceeds from the stallion service fees and organized a food drive to help. Southwestern Ontario horse people joined in and raised thousands for the people in Haiti. In a desperate economic climate and a sport seemingly in limbo, the huge-hearted harness community stepped up. It was a classy event as Harness Racing in Canada handed out the hardware at the O'Brien Awards. And there was little doubt as to who would be the O'Brien Award winner for Horse of the Year.
Muscle Hill drawing away with every stride. Operation Hamiltonian complete. It's Muscle Hill 150-1, equaling the world record.
While it's obvious that harness racing has had more than its share of crises through the recent years, 2010 will be remembered for the critical situations that exploded in so many racing jurisdictions. Great Canadian Gaming, owners of Fraser Downs, floated the idea of a drastic reduction in race dates, perhaps none for the 2011 season. Then it was proposed that harness people in British Columbia and Alberta hold a joint or joint circuit, as it were, meet between the two jurisdictions. Now, members of the board of Horse Racing British Columbia, many of whom were from the thoroughbred side, were accused of being behind the plan in an alleged attempt to muscle their way into racing at Fraser Downs. Throughout all this, no one at Horse Racing Alberta was told about this plan, not even the president of the Alberta Standardbred Horse Association, Bill Andrew.
After I picked myself off the floor, I wondered what the heck was going on, and basic tenet of any business would be that if you're going to release some information about a stakeholder, you'd at least have the courtesy to talk to them or engage them first, and none of that was done. But the fix is in. And so basically you've got a committee that's chaired by an assistant deputy minister, and from what I see from a fairly simple head count, you can pretty well guess which way the votes are going. And the other fundamental problem that I have is you have the other breed that's involved as a stakeholder in the thoroughbreds, and they're getting away scot-free and basically would gain a tremendous advantage. I'm positive that the underlying deal in British Columbia is that the thoroughbreds take over Fraser Downs.
Just as this report was being recorded, it was revealed that there will be racing in 2011, harness racing that is, at Fraser Downs. That's after a deal was reached with the track's owners and the BC Horse Racing Industry Management Board. Of course, the big shoe that teeters on the brink of dropping is none other than New Jersey, the home of the Meadowlands, the Hambo, the Meadowlands Pace, once the mecca of harness racing. The Big M is threatened by a new state governor who is not interested in a public funding solution to some of the harness racing problems there, nor will Chris Christie allow Meadowlands to have slots or a casino, so that makes a private solution a bit difficult. Like all good politicians, Christie bought some time by commissioning a study on racing's problems. The study was headed by one John Hansen, a land developer whose motives were called into question when he concluded that A, the Meadowlands should basically be closed, and that B, say 30 harness dates be moved to Monmouth Park, a track that was made and is exclusively for thoroughbreds. Tom Lucento, president of the New Jersey Standardbred Owners Association, for one, isn't buying one horse dropping of it.
You know, obviously they blindsided us with this report, which I didn't expect. And, you know, I question the motive, you know, of the Hansen report. And I also question Mr. Hansen's involvement in it. He's a real estate developer. Quite obviously, as I see it, and I think many others, he's not going to pull the wool over anybody's eyes. They want to get us out of the Meadowlands and then bring up a gambling casino up there and then sell it off for billions of dollars.
The struggle, as you can imagine, is ongoing, and it gets worse. Most recent word is that Governor Christie has vetoed a Racing Commission recommendation to continue with a full harness meet at Meadowlands. And oh, there's more. Now there's legislation afoot to wean the New Jersey racing industry off the $30 million annual subsidy it receives for not having slots. That money used to come from Atlantic City casinos, and under this legislation, the money would now go back to, you guessed it, Atlantic City. Here at home, the racing scene saw more changes at the upper levels. Standardbred Canada said goodbye to longtime CEO Ted Smith. Taking over the reins, John Gallinger.
The challenges of racing are not new to me, and so I come into the role with my eyes wide open. But I think without challenge, life would be boring.
Gallinger hasn't allowed boredom to set in. He's already hard at work on the Standardbred Canada Sustainability and Redevelopment Plan. Another change at the top was taking place at OHA, with the appointment of Don Amos as president, promising a new spirit of cooperation.
From my perspective, I will have a good relationship with, you know, people in the standardbred business, whether it be COSA or whether it be other jurisdictions, and then I'll also have a good relationship with the thoroughbred people. So from that perspective, I think I've got one foot on the boat and one foot on the dock, and I understand the mentality and how, why people feel certain ways.
Not all the news in corporate racing was good. One in particular was seen by many as reprehensible. David Brooks, CEO of Bulletproof Enterprises, owners of champions such as Show Her the Money, was convicted on all 17 counts of securities fraud and conspiracy. Prosecutors in New York successfully argued that Brooks built the company for more than $6 million in unauthorized expenditures. Brooks was known for his lavish lifestyle, which included collecting writing pens worth tens of thousands each, and throwing a party for his daughter, which ran over $1 million. But the stars of the sport, the horses, drivers, and trainers, still shone brightly. In part two of our year in review, we'll look at some of the highlights on the track, as well as other events that made 2010 the year that was. I'm Norm Borg.